I have to say, I feel so lucky to get to speak with some of the best theatre practitioners of our times, and this week is no different. I am thrilled to welcome our guest this evening, the one and only Sasha Haller. You will have seen her on our stages for over 20 years. She's currently starring in Cursed at Belvoir. I've seen her at other productions at Belvoir, including The Sugar House a couple of years ago by Alana Valentine and others, and productions at STC in the 2000s. She's an AFI award-winning actor, and interestingly, her parents also actually co-founded Nimrod Theatre Company, which is now Belvoir. Her credits include critically acclaimed TV shows like Love My Way, Offspring and The Letdown, and roles in films such as John Curran's Praise, Babe, Pig in the City, My Year Without Sex, The Dressmaker, and Peter Rabbit. And recently she entered the world of podcasts with Vodka Books and Me. And she's here to talk about her life in theatre and beyond and how she got to be one of our most respected actors. Welcome to Stages, Sasha Haller.
Thank you. What a glorious introduction. Can you just send me that and I'll just, you know, I'll type it out for people.
I will. You can hand that around.
On a card.
So before we get into what you're doing now and life in these times, I want to get a sense of where you are from. So where did you begin life and what was it like growing up for you?
I'm a Sydney girl, and my parents, Ken and Lillian Haller, co-founded the Nimrod Theatre in 1970-71, where Griffin Theatre is, in what is actually Nimrod Street Theatre.
Yes.
The street was called Nimrod Street and they named the theatre after it. It used to be a brothel, it used to be a stable, which is why it's often known as the Stables. And I grew up there with all the other people who were trying to bring Australian voices to the stage. It's something we take for granted now, but back then people spoke with an English accent on stage. And lead roles were always imported from England. So someone got on the boat or the plane and came over. So we didn't have an Australian voice. And my parents and other people, lots of people in Melbourne at La Mama and Black Theatre with Bob Mazur, and
people
were sick of it. And so they started working on creating their own cultural identity through Australian playwriting and having Australian accents on stage, which was, you know, not the done thing. And then the theatre moved, because it was so successful, from Griffin to a salt factory in Belvoir Street, a salt and tomato factory. And that's where I grew up for the next 10 years of my life. And I suppose if I'd worked a little harder at school, I could have become a lawyer like my parents. But the bug had bitten and I became an actress.
So did you actually live in the theatre?
Well, it felt like it, because who knows what it's like to run a company, especially if both your parents are working there, there is really no end to the amount of time you spend there. I had a bed. Well, actually, I had a sort of basket for when I was a bubba, and then I just had a bed out in the back, either in Mum's office because she was the general manager, or behind box office, because they just had to make sure the theatre was running.
So were they working in the theatre and also being a, you know, magistrate and...
Oh, well, the crossover was interesting. So my mother became a magistrate much later. My father was a lawyer. My mother had the law degree too, and they both hated it and wanted to do something else. But so Dad would run between court and often not be there so he could run the theatre company. But, no, they abandoned the law to follow their passion in the theatre and only went back to it later.
Oh, wow. It was certainly a different era, and not a different era, but a new wave, like you say, of theatre. So you've been around it your whole life. Were you, you know, putting on plays and things like that as a child as well?
The Bell children were, so Hilary and Lucy Bell were, but I was sort of just more running around, just, you know, hanging. I loved hanging around in the dressing rooms, and watching from side stage was a real joy, because you felt like you could see the actors and know the secrets. I lived there. I was allowed to clean up the glasses from the bar. That was pretty exciting as a young person. Roey, the bar manager at Nimrod, was like, go and get the glasses. I thought I was too big to be able to do that.
Wow. What a history. That's so fantastic. So you had always wanted to be an actor then, therefore, or
Well, I don't know. I don't think so. I enjoyed mucking around as most kids do. I mean, I don't know who has a life plan in a teenager, but I certainly was happy that I loved it by the time. I mean, I was doing it at school.
Yeah.
And then I went overseas for a while and then came back and tried to do an arts degree, but I just tried out for NIDA and I got in. So, and that was the path.
So what did your parents think about you taking on this journey?
Well, they were massive realists, and they were, as long as you do an actual kind of tertiary degree, would be quite happy that, you know, you would do something. But I think they saw that I was good at it.
Mm.
I guess if I'd been shit, they might have said something. And then I went out and I got work pretty steadily. I'm graduating in theatre, and that made them happy.
When I look at your bio, you have a stream of work on stage, like for the first early years, a bit of voiceover. But what happened there? Was it sort of predominantly theatre and then into?
Yeah, I mean, because I went to NIDA, and NIDA's charter is a theatre school. We were trained to be, you know, fabulous theatre actresses and actors, which is great. And the absolute pinnacle of what you could do was work on stage in Sydney or try and get to London. I wanted to do film and television after that. I wanted to learn how to do it because it seemed so far away and so foreign. And the way I just did that was, you know, try and get anything in television to try and understand what it was like to stand behind a line and know where my mark was and face the camera. I felt much more at home in theatre when I started, and I was learning the other way by experience, you know. Whereas I think now, if you're a graduate or even just a young actor who's trying out, you know, if you're not looking at film and television, you're kind of mad, because that really is where all the work is. I don't know. It's interesting. It changes. It goes in phases.
You've certainly stepped across all of the...
I wasn't going to play that kind of... There was a really big divide between theatre actors and film actors, and television actors.
Mm.
And I suppose I was lucky enough to come through a period where I was like, well, why can't I do all three?
Mm. And now how is it back to be back on stage in...
It's fucking brilliant.
Yeah.
It's just like there's nothing else. I'm sitting here exhausted because I'm playing this huge role in this new Australian play, and it's just exhilarating. It's a kind of tired happy that you just can't get in any other medium. And, you know, I'm reserving my energy because this character's just a nutcase and she just blows up all over the stage. But it's just a joy. I'd forgotten how all-consuming it is.
Mm.
But also how incredibly satisfying it is to perform for an audience and give them. And we've been having people, you know, rush up to us afterwards with sort of gleeful joy and say, thank you for bringing theatre back. And, my God, I survived lockdown. The one thing I couldn't survive was theatre being closed. And they're kind of evangelical in their love for it. And we're like, hey, you're welcome. That's great.
So nice to hear. Is so Cursed is it's written by Cody Bedford. It was a Bal Knives fellowship recipient in 2018. Tell us a bit about the play. What is the curse of the play? What is the world?
Well, first of all, you should know about Cody because she's amazing.
Yeah.
She's a writer for television, Mystery Road, and this is her first full-length play, which is amazing. And it's got autobiographical themes in it about fucked up families and dysfunctional families. But what's so great about it is that I remember reading it thinking, this can't be right. So I played Dawn, the mother figure who has three different nationalities of children from three different husbands. And Cody says, yeah, there's a bit of that in my family. And I'm like, hang on, what? And so I've got a Maltese son, an Aboriginal daughter and a Chinese daughter, all from three different husbands. And I'm divorced from all and, you know, looking after my mother back in Geraldton in WA.
Yeah.
And I've spent my life, Dawn's spent her life in and out of what she calls nut houses. So she's written this kind of riotous comedy. I mean, it's so obvious to say people come home and they don't want to be together. But Nan or my mother, she has a tendency to put on dying. She calls it funning. And so she sort of sometimes pretends to be dying so she'll get the family home. And everyone's got their secrets, but basically the three children feel like, because of how dysfunctional their growing up was, with three different husbands and mum and in and out of the mental hospital, that they don't want their lives to be as bad as hers. So there's a lot of tension, and there's a couple of fake funerals, some funerals, there's singing with dildos. There's a bit of Lady Di. I've got a Lady Di dress in there. Maybe nice. A dress. Yeah, it's really incredible.
It sounds like they're working like with the, you know, not being victims of their circumstances.
Yeah, well, that's what we do as children, don't we? We say, I won't be like you.
Yeah.
You know, I will never be like you. But, of course, there's so many similarities, and they're worried about the curse travelling through. But also, what are they going to do with mum if Nan dies and all that kind of stuff? But basically, it's a wonderful exploration of madness and joy, because sometimes the eldest child, well, she's not the eldest, but the character that Shanoa plays, my Aboriginal daughter, is the responsible one. So she gets to have less fun because she's always trying to say, now, come on, what are we going to do? Where are the bills? How are we going to live? And Dawn would rather just drink a bottle of Passion Pop and put on some Mariah Carey and have a party.
And forget the world we're born into or living in.
I think that's why people are responding so positively to the play, because she's a bit of a party girl.
Mm.
And after COVID, I think everyone is just in such raptures to have someone else going, come on, just relax a bit, you know, have a drink, relax, it's all okay. And I think it's a bit of a relief for our audience. It's quite cathartic to have someone else telling you to let loose. It's good fun.
How have you come to, like, prepare yourself to come back to the stage? I mean, has it been a while?
It wasn't that long. I think it always seems longer, but, you know, I've been busy doing TV and film in between. But the last one I did was Alana Valentine's play.
Sugar House, I saw that, yes. Which is another very Australian story.
Yeah, well, I suppose the thing is, with great pride, because my father is no longer alive and I'm very sad about that, but he also championed Australian playwriting. It was his big thing at Nimrod, at Belvoir. Well, Nimrod as it was, to say, yes. Yeah, well, look, we can put on Strindberg, but where are the Australian writers? And so I suppose I've actually done quite a lot of new works, carrying on the Hawler tradition, and it's incredibly joyful. Strong female Australian voices, it's great. And I suppose to me what's similar about the two plays is they're really sort of old-fashioned in there, just straight stories about people. You know, no tricks, no clevers, no screens, no time jumps, a little bit of time jumping, but a straight narrative, and people really enjoy it.
You're listening to Stages, and I am talking with actor Sasha Hawler. What has brought you to podcast? And I wish I could offer you a vodka.
How do you know I'm not drinking one right now?
Well, the magic of radio. You don't know. I did listen to your Trent Dalton discussion, which I just love, because I did read Boy Swallows Universe, and it is very the Australian voice again. And but what has brought you into the podcast world?
The other side of my life is I'm a massive bibliophile, book freak, reading freak, and my parents always had massive libraries. And there, you know, my father, the first thing he'd say to a boyfriend who came into the house was, so what are you reading? And I'd be like, Dad, just let the guy in, let him walk in the door. No, I just want to know, what's he reading? Like, what are you reading at the moment? Like, that was my whole life.
So what are you reading at the moment?
Nothing. I'm reading my lines to be able to do the show. I've got Trent's new book. I've got Jessica Detman's new book. But, yeah, the bedside table is a bit high at the moment because I'm performing. But otherwise I generally have two or three on at the same time. And then what happened was I interviewed my good friend Celeste Barber for her book launch, and the head of HarperCollins said, wow, you're quite good at that. And I said, yes, I am. And she said, do you want to do more of that? And I said, yes, I do. And so I ended up doing a whole lot of book launches where I suppose I have a different tone to, say, another launch, where I'm a reader but I'm also a performer, so I'm not really shy when it comes to interviewing authors. And I've had some great times upstairs and dead in Newtown, gassing away at about these and fanonizing these fabulous new writers. And then I thought, well, I better put them into a podcast. And I just sort of had them ready just at the beginning of COVID, which was perfect. But then I started the play. So that's all, you know, juggle, juggle.
Yes. So is it like that? Is it complete immersion and it's your world for the period of it's going up until the end of November at this stage? But is that the world for you then? Everything closes down?
I just nearly keep my eyes open today, Richard. I'm the vampire now. I'm looking at the sun going, what is that yellow thing? Can it turn off? Please, so I can go back into the theatre and do my job. And then I'll have to come back and be a human again and do daylight.
So over your vast career as a performer and actor on stage, are there certain productions that you were kind of stand out for you as something that has challenged you the most?
On stage, I suppose when I started, Adam Cook did a really beautiful production of the Catherine Thompson play.
Oh, Diving for Pearls.
Thank you. And I had seen a production done at Belvoir and thought, God, well, no one can ever top that. That was incredible, directed by Neil Armfield. Mm-hmm. And then Adam said he wanted to do a production and I got to play Verge, who's this fabulous girl with a learning disability and great love. And we did it for a couple of seasons. We were out at Penrith, we were at the Ensemble, and pretty hard work to want to kind of top yourself every night.
Mm-hmm.
But then she doesn't really want to. She wants to live and end up, you know, having a family of some kind. So she's actually a joyous character. But you forget sometimes, so you come out to the bar and everyone's like, oh, my God, are you all right? And you're like, yeah, I just gave that all to you. So I'm actually okay. It was acting, remember? You do too many, grief plays. I think that can be very trying for you psychologically. There's not a lot of work done on how actors de-roll.
How do you de-roll then?
Double vodka. you know, I do the sort of classic Epsom salts in the shower and brush the character off nightly and try and remind myself that although I feel immersed in the character, she's not me and I am not her. But I sort of think they've done some studies more recently, certainly more recently than when I was at NIDA and no one was talking about it, about the fact that the brain can't really distinguish between the two and that if you travel down a pathway again and again, whether it be for acting or for reality, your brain starts to say, well, this is your reality.
Wow.
And so it can be a little damaging, and we can see that in history that actors can be quite damaged people. I suppose I'm lucky I have a husband and two children and they're normal people with real lives. And so, I do have a balance to see that there are other people living normal, real lives that aren't make-believe.
So what advice would you give to someone who wanted to pursue a career as an actor and survive?
Yeah, survive is probably the big thing. Look, I think starting young is good because the passion that you have when you're young will take you a long way. I think training is really good. Natural instincts, vital, and you should be doing stuff. But training, if you ever want to work in theatre, even film, is really important. And good teachers with good advice. Make your own work and be in co-ops. The same story that we were told. If you want to be in film, make a film, make a short film. If you want to be in theatre and no one's giving you any work in theatre, then go and be in a co-op or three. And actually learn what it's like. And also I'm surprised how many actors don't see other people's work.
Mm.
You know, like most theatre companies have an unwaged production, as in like completely free. And I tell actors that and they go, oh, really? And I'm like, yeah, you should be able to basically see everything in Sydney. Or I'll say, what was the last Australian film or television you watched? And they're like, I don't really watch Australian stuff. And I'm like, well, how the hell do you expect to be in it?
Did you have good teachers or was it The life that you were born into, yeah.
Oh, no, I had brilliant teachers who I hated because that's your job, isn't it? You're supposed to hate your teachers. You're supposed to. We had this French visiting professor or teacher director from the Comédie Française, and he said, you don't understand, drama school is about a wall. And we were like, what? Is this what? And he said, you need a wall to bang your head against so you know what you want and what you don't want. And that's what drama school is. It has to be awful. It has to be intense. You need a parameter. Otherwise, you're just a loose actor agent out there whirling around doing nothing.
Mm. Well, Sasha Haller, thank you so much for joining me this evening.
When are you coming to see the play?
I'm coming to see the play. I'm definitely coming. It's playing up until the end of the month at Belvoir upstairs, and I will let you go and finish your vodka and have a rest and turn the sound down till show goes on. Thank you again.
Thank you so much.
Well, that was actor Sasha Haller, and she's performing at Belvoir's Cursed at the moment up until the end of the month.